She was medium height, with her dark hair done in a ponytail. Her dress whites rode well on her trim physique. Puller put her age at about 40, which was young for a captain. It normally took 20 years from graduation at Annapolis to get the four bars and a star and the full eagle spread on your uniform. That also explained Robert Puller's reference. She walked over to him and put out her hand. He shook it and felt the strength in her grip as he looked down at her from nearly a foot gap.
Captain?
Gloria Miles, Chief Puller.
Please, make it John.
Then you can call me Gloria. My father was a master sergeant in the Marine Corps. He named me. You know what his nickname for me was? Puller shook his head. Glory. She smiled, but her eyes held a wistful look. Can you imagine the teasing and bullying I got with that one? He looked her over.
It seems to have made you stronger, and if you're as young as I think you are, then an overachiever as well.
Right on both accounts. I made 06 3 years early, but it felt 6 years longer than that.
I can see that. How is your father?
No longer with us. How is your father? To that question, Puller almost always answered,
hanging in there.
But there was something about Miles that made him say,
he's seen better days, unfortunately.
It's hard to see your father grow old, said Miles. It's harder still when your father was a soldier, a leader, tough as nails. You expect him to live forever.
Where are you deployed now?
Asked Puller. For now, I'm working out of the Norfolk Naval Station, so I can oversee my baby being born. Puller looked confused for a moment and glanced at her unadorned ring finger. She noted this and laughed wistfully. I'm waiting to take command of a Freedom Class LCS they're just about to launch. The USS Seattle, said Miles, referencing the acronym for a literal combat ship. That's my baby.
Yes, ma'am. That must be quite a thrill.
She glanced over his shoulder. Why don't we find a private place to talk? Puller turned to see a group of suits and uniforms come into the library and take up seats. They found an empty room at the end of the hall on the third floor. Puller closed the door behind them, and they sat across from each other in fold-up chairs. Miles placed her cap on her lap. Puller did likewise with his. She ran her gaze over his rows of ribbons, and her eyebrows hiked. This was the military's equivalent of bragging rights. Guts and glory on full uniform display on one's chest. The earning of them had been anything but uniform. Puller had endured violent intrusions of metal into his body and been thrown into hellish situations that no human being should have to endure. In other words, just a day's work for a soldier. The DSC, purples, bronze, twin silvers, along with everything else. Very impressive, John. You've served your country faithfully and well.
I do my duty, like everybody else.
There's nothing wrong with acknowledging exceptionalism.
Why would my brother contact you?
I think he contacted a number of people who he thought might be helpful to you.
But you're the only one he asked me to meet with.
She nodded. I think my relevance to your investigation has nothing to do with my being in uniform.
Okay.
It has a lot to do with someone I know quite well.
Okay.
As I alluded to, I have no children, but I am a godmother to someone.
Who is that?
Jeff Sands.
I don't know who that is.
He's the grandson of Peter Driscoll.
Peter Driscoll, the Senate Majority Leader? Why would that knowledge be of use to me?
Jeff just turned 21 years old. Because of his grandfather's connections, he got into Georgetown, where he's a junior. He could not have gotten in on his own merit.
Okay, still not getting what this has to do with my case.
Jeff is a drug user. He is also probably a drug dealer. I don't know that for sure, but that is my best guess.
So a drug dealer, maybe. Why haven't I heard anything about that?
Why would you?
So Grandpa has kept it out of the courts and the news?
Like I said, I don't know about the drug dealing part, but Jeff has a lot of wealthy and well-connected friends at Ivy League colleges who could be customers of his.
So a network of elite drug users, and what have you done about it?
I'm his godmother, which is usually an honorary rank. I knew his mother, Jennifer. She died when Jeff was 8. It was a big blow to him. His father is a hedge fund guy. He works and lives in New York. After Jennifer died, he married a much younger woman. They have two little kids. He's written Jeff off. I tried to step into the breach, so I've spent a lot of time with Jeff over the years. Not as a second mom or anything, but just as a friend, someone to talk to.
Jeff have any other siblings?
No.
And what does he tell you when you two talk about his issues?
I've confronted him a number of times. He tells me that things are fine, he had a problem but has it no longer, and that anything else I've heard about him is just wrong.
Did he look like he was using?
Not when he was with me.
And did you tell my brother this?
Yes.
How did he even come to contact you? Were you friends? You didn't say.
No. I knew of him, but he told me he had never heard of me. He said it had to do with the results of an algorithm he had come up with for the purposes of your investigation. Puller cracked a smile.
An algorithm? Now that sounds like Bobby, all right. Are you sure Driscoll knows about his grandson's wayward ways?
I know he does. I told him numerous times.
And what did he do?
He said he would handle it.
And did he?
I doubt I would be here talking to you if he had.
When was the last time you spoke with Jeff?
About 2 weeks ago.
Did he ever mention a man named Tony Vincenzo?
No, not to me. I would have remembered that.
How about a penthouse on Billionaire's Row in Manhattan?
Puller gave her the street address. Miles looked puzzled. You know, I think I dropped him off there once when we were in New York together. This was about a month ago. He said there was going to be a party. I remember telling him that he needed to be careful. And I also remarked that he must have some really, really rich friends. Do you know who owns the place?
We tried to track it and failed, which means it might be a global criminal enterprise with mega deep pockets.
Oh my God, who the hell is he mixed up with?
I intend to find out, but I need to talk to your godson, ASAP.
Do you want me to reach out to him and arrange something?
No, that won't work.
Why?
Because he'll either disappear or someone will be sent to kill me. And since that's already happened once very recently, I'd like to avoid it again if possible.
Miles had turned pale as he was speaking. Then, what do you want me to do? She said in barely above a whisper.
Send me his contact info and a picture. I'll take it from there.
And what should I do in the meantime?
Do not contact him. Go back to Norfolk, keep your head down, and when your ship is commissioned, get on it and don't look back.
You're really scaring me, John.
Then my mission is accomplished.
Are you working this case all alone? Puller took out his phone.
No, I've got a partner who I'm just about to call.
I hope this person is good.
She's far better than good.
Chapter 41. The next evening, Pine met Puller outside the 8th Avenue exit from Penn Station in New York City. He had ridden an Amtrak regional train up from D.C., arriving in about 3 hours. The weather was overcast and chilly as they walked along the street, Puller's small duffel slung over his shoulder. His dress blues had been exchanged for jeans, a sweater, and a dark blue blazer. As they walked, they filled each other in on their respective developments, including Robert Puller's algorithm, netting them Gloria Miles and, through her, Jeff Sands.
So have you told Lineberry that Linda Holden Bryant was his mole all those years ago?
Asked Puller. I should, but I haven't. I'm not exactly sure how to go about it. Plus, he's still recovering from being shot. They grabbed a cab that took them up the west side to a condo building in the 80s near Riverside Drive. As they passed the top-hatted and uniformed doorman and walked into the soaring marble-and-chrome lobby, Puller asked,
What are we doing here?
This is where we're staying. Carol is in the condo now making dinner.
Whose condo is it? I usually crash on a friend's couch when I'm in New York. The CID's per diem for lodging doesn't cover anything in the city lodging arena, and that includes sleeping in your car in a parking garage.
Puller eyed the smiling concierge seated behind a desk that would not have looked out of place at Versailles and added,
And I don't have to be the world's greatest detective to deduce that this is also out of the Bureau's lodging per diem.
Pine looked uncomfortable. This is Jack Lineberry's pied-à-terre. He generously allowed us to stay here.
Weren't you staying at a hotel in Trenton?
Pine thumbed the button for the elevator and said, He called yesterday. I told him I was in New York, and he insisted that we stay here.
Was this before or after you spoke with his old flame?
After, but I didn't tell him that. He was just being kind. They rode the car up to the 10th floor, and she led him down a wide, luxuriously carpeted hallway, lined with stout wooden doors and paintings that looked original. She used her passkey to enter the apartment. Puller followed, set down his duffel, and looked around.
Wow, Lineberry is really loaded.
Yes. He has his own jet, a mansion in rural Georgia, a penthouse in Atlanta.
And this place,
added Puller.
And he's your father.
He's my biological father. But Tim Pine raised me, she retorted. As far as I'm concerned, he's my father.
I get that. But does Lineberry have any other kids?
No, he never married. He had me and Mercy.
Well, don't be surprised if he leaves all of this to you.
Pine looked surprised. I never even thought about that, and I don't want it.
But he can still leave it to you, and you can do with it what you want.
I'll worry about that if and when it turns out I have to. A moment later, Blum walked into the room wearing an apron and a smudge of flour on her cheek. She was rubbing her hands on a cloth. I thought I heard you come in. This place is deceptively large and very quiet. I hope you're hungry. Dinner will be ready in about 10 minutes.
I am,
said Puller.
It was slim pickings on the train.
Let me show you to your room, said Pine. She led him down a hall to the last door and opened it. She stepped in and looked around at what was clearly a high-dollar, professionally decorated space, just like the rest of the apartment.
Lineberry has good taste, or hired someone who has good taste,
remarked Puller as he set his duffel on the four-poster bed. Pine sat in a chair in front of a reproduction desk, all primed with stationery and pen and a large, leather-handled magnifying glass. So, Jeff Sands? Puller nodded and sat on the bed.
His grandfather is one of the most powerful men in the country, but his son-in-law has apparently written Jeff off and has a new family to focus on.
So he might be a drug dealer in addition to being a user? How has that not hit the news?
I did some research on it. Sands is one of 16 grandchildren, and he has a different last name. And from what I could gather, not many people are in the loop on this. And maybe folks don't consider it newsworthy. I mean, Sands' dad was the absent parent. I can't believe many people will ding Peter Driscoll because one of his many grandchildren turned out bad. He raised his own kids, and they all seem to have turned out okay. It's not exactly his responsibility to look after another generation.
Okay, that certainly makes sense. So what do we do?
I've got Sands' address. We set up surveillance and see what we see.
And why not go directly to question him?
No, I want to reconnoiter this sucker a little bit first.
The federal government and the Trenton police have come down on us like a ton of bricks. I can't see how Jeff Sands could have made that happen. But I can see someone like Peter Driscoll having a hand in that.
I can't answer that one way or another. I hope to be able to shortly.
But people have been killed. Sheila Weathers and Jerome Blake and Ed McElroy. Call me hopelessly naive, but I also can't believe that a U.S. senator would be involved in that. When he didn't answer, she said, Puller?
I'm trying to decide if you're hopelessly naive or I'm a confirmed cynic.
But you think it's possible he's involved somehow?
I think there's so much money in politics today that anything is possible. Guys like Driscoll are a hot commodity, Adley. They can be worth billions or even trillions of dollars to certain folks.
He paused.
What do you think someone would do for $1 trillion?
Anything, she said. And looking at it that way, I guess we're fortunate that only 3 people are dead.
But I think that number is going to go up.
Including you and me? It's already been a close call for us both. You especially.
From the minute we put on the shield.
We accepted that possibility, Pine finished for him.
But again, this is not your case, Atlee. You really should just focus on finding your sister.
Very chivalrous of you to give me such an easy out.
Which you're not going to take?
My answer is the same as the last time you asked. Let's go eat. You're not the only one who's hungry. Chapter 42. It was the hour of night when most people were already in bed. A marine fog had rolled in off the Hudson and been met by a twin mist burning off the East River. They met in the middle of Manhattan like secret lovers on a nighttime tryst. Pine was fully dressed as she gazed out the bedroom window and saw nothing. Any activity going on at street level 10 floors below was currently invisible to her. She checked her main weapon and her Beretta for the fourth and final time. She moved down to Blum's bedroom door and listened for a few moments until she heard the woman's gentle snores. Puller was waiting for her in the front room. He was dressed all in black, and she noted the bulges along his waistline where his twin M11s sat. Puller took out his phone and scrolled through some screens.
I've had a team of CID agents up here tracking Sands all day and night.
What has he been doing?
Apparently, the twin workloads of being a student at Georgetown and operating a drug ring got to be too much for him. He's taking some time off from academia to fatten his wallet and expand his market share.
So it's confirmed that he's dealing?
Pretty much, yeah.
Have we ruled out his father being a partner in all this? She asked as they stepped into the elevator car and headed down.
Not definitively. But from all we could ascertain, the guy is legit rich. And he's a prick for a father, at least to Sands. So I doubt father and son are in this together.
A taxi dropped them three blocks from their destination in Brooklyn.
It's a club where Sands hangs out,
explained Puller. What kind of club?
An expensive one.
You want front or back? She asked.
Up to you.
Pine headed to the back. She settled in behind a line of dumpsters about 20 yards from the rear exit of the place that was called simply the club. Now that's either really lazy or really ingenious, thought Pine. Puller had emailed her a picture of Sands. He was handsome, with an arrogant glaze to his features. He looked like a child of privilege to Pine. But then again, his mother had died while he was a child, and his father had abandoned him. Pine could relate to that. But it didn't absolve the man from the consequences of being a drug dealer. A light rain began to fall, and Pine moved back so that she was under the cover of an overhang. She pulled up the collar on her jacket and kept her gaze on the back door of the club. She stiffened at 1 a.m. when the door opened and two men stumbled out. But neither one was Sands. They quickly moved off, picking up their pace as the rain came down harder. 20 minutes more passed, and Pine was wondering whether this stakeout would turn out to be a bust when the door opened once more. She stiffened and then relaxed as the woman appeared. She looked to be in her 20s, short, voluptuous, and wearing barely anything at all. A moment later, Pine came to rigid attention as the man appeared in the doorway and looked around. Jeff Sands then stepped out, smiled, and coiled his hands around the woman. His hands dipped to her buttocks and took up purchase there. They kissed, and he maneuvered her back against the wall. Pine wasn't sure she wanted to see what was coming next, until the two men appeared from a darkened corner of the rear of the building. The woman darted away, and it was just Sands and the two gents with pistols pointed at his handsome and now terrified face. He put his hands up and backed away. She could see him pleading with the gunman, even as she knew these pleas would not cut it. She had already texted a one-word alert to Puller. She slipped out both pistols and moved forward. Her Glock was aimed at one assailant, her Beretta at the other. They had backed Sands up to the same wall as he had the woman. She would normally call out her presence and FBI authority, but this situation did not ideally allow for it. Rushing silently forward, she clubbed the first man on the back of the head with the butt of her pistol. He dropped to the ground with a yell. The other man whipped around, his gun leveled at her chest. The next moment, he was on the ground after being slammed there by Puller, who had rounded the corner and hit the fellow with a full head of steam. They quickly disarmed the men and then ordered them to get up. The man Pine had clubbed had blood streaming down his face.
I need a doctor,
he screamed.
What you need,
said Puller, holding out his shield,
is to start answering questions, beginning with why you were just about to kill this man.
Sands had collapsed against the wall and was panting with tears in his eyes.
We weren't going to kill him,
said the other man, rubbing a bruise on his cheek where it had slammed into the pavement.
We were going to talk to him about some delinquent bills.
And you do that with guns? Said Pine.
Mr. Sands usually needs some persuading.
Puller took out his phone and punched in a number.
Well, you can explain your technique to NYPD. How about that? You don't really want to do that.
They turned because this came from Sands, who had regained his composure and was looking at them imploringly.
These are business associates of mine. They really weren't going to hurt me. Which I can't say for you two,
the same man said, rubbing his cheek again. Pine said, either one of you know Tony Vincenzo? The men glanced at each other until the bleeder said,
who?
Puller put his phone away and looked at Sands, who said,
this has nothing to do with Tony. They don't know him.
Pine turned her attention to him. But you do?
I know him, yeah,
he said grudgingly. Puller glanced at the two men.
Beat it.
The men looked in surprise at each other and then hurried off, disappearing into the mist as quietly as they had emerged from it. Sands pushed off the wall and straightened out his clothes.
Thanks for the help. I'd buy you a drink, but I have someplace I have to be.
Puller hooked him by the arm.
You do have a place to be, speaking with us. Let's go.
Sands strained against him.
This is a free country, and I've done nothing wrong, so get your damn hands off me.
Pine stepped forward. Or we can call up your grandfather and let him know what our investigation has uncovered about you.
You think he'd care?
Sneered Sands.
Why don't you call the asshole who happens to be my father and see what you'd get there?
Maybe they won't be interested, but the police probably will. Those guys weren't collecting for a charity. How much do you owe them?
Why are you guys giving me such a hard time?
Puller remarked.
We know what you're involved in, Jeff. And people have died. What makes you think you are special? Who's died?
Tony Vincenzo's father, and a woman named Sheila Weathers. Sands looked panicked.
Sheila, you're lying. She was just...
Just what? Just at that penthouse the other night? So was I. She's dead. I saw her body.
You're lying.
We can take you right now to the morgue to see her corpse. It won't be pretty because they've already autopsied her. I have the report on my phone. You want to see the pictures? Sands shook his head and put a shaky hand to his face.
No, Let's go get a cup of coffee. There's an all-night place right around the corner,
said Puller. They walked off into the darkness. Chapter 43. It took one full cup of coffee before Sands would even look up at them. The place was a dive, but pleasant enough, and not too crowded at this hour. Both Pine and Puller had kept an eye out for the two men who had gone after Sands. If they were out there, and they probably were, they were good at staying invisible. You want something to eat? Asked Pine, who cradled her coffee and let the steam rise to her face, helping to cut against the rawness outside. Sands shook his head, dumped some sugar into the cup the waitress had just refilled, and said,
Sheila was nice.
She told me she was sort of dating Tony. Sands pushed a hand through his thick, tousled hair. He looked like a Kennedy, thought Pine. Handsome, charming, connected, and sometimes getting into serious trouble.
I guess she was, but we all hung out.
She worked at Fort Dix, in the commissary, said Pine. At least that's what I was told.
Yeah, something like that.
So why did a girl like that warn a past a billionaire's row?
Because I said she could. Same as Tony.
Same as Lindsay Axelrod?
Lindsay? Why are you mentioning her?
Because she was the one who set me and Sheila up. She helped whoever killed Sheila.
No way, I don't believe that,
he said heatedly.
Lindsay's cool. She wouldn't do something like that.
And how do you know Lindsay? Asked Pine.
We just met. The way people do.
Why do I think she sought you out? Said Pine.
Why would she do that? She's just an IT worker at Fort Dix.
I went to the penthouse with Lindsay. She got in because of her connection to Tony. Or at least, I thought that then. She pointed out Sheila to me there. We arranged to meet with her later. Lindsay and I were getting into what I thought was an Uber that Lindsay ordered. The next thing I remember, I was waking up next to a dead Sheila, and Lindsay was nowhere to be seen.
Maybe they got her too.
No, I later went to her house. No one answered my knock, so I called the cops to do a welfare check. When they got there, she spoke to them through a doorbell camera setup and told a bullshit story about her mother being ill and her having to go out of town. She never mentioned what happened that night. She's in this up to her eyeballs. And she's not just an IT person. She fooled me. And she apparently fooled you. Puller put his coffee down and leaned forward.
So what exactly is going on, Jeff?
Sands looked nervously at him.
Look, I don't know what you want me to say. The truth would be really good. How'd you even find out about me?
Puller said.
I had a talk with your godmother. She was very worried about you. She asked me to check on you. So here I am, checking on you.
He paused.
She really does care for you, Jeff. Yeah, I know Aunt Gloria does. She's really the only one after my mom died.
He added miserably. Lots of people have shitty lives, Jeff, said Pine. But you're young. You've got money, unless those clothes you're wearing are knockoffs. You're attending one of the best colleges in America.
I got in because of who my grandfather is. That's the only reason. I didn't even want to go, but he insisted. He said I had to make something of myself.
Maybe he genuinely means it. Sands chuckled. What's the joke? Asked Pine.
The only thing he's genuinely concerned about is that I might do something to mess up his good name. I heard that he plans to retire after his term is up.
Pointed out Puller.
He's also planning to join this big-ass lobbying firm to fund his golden years. Anything messes that up, he's SOL.
I thought members of Congress had to wait before they could lobby the government, said Pine.
The way it was explained to me, he won't be directly lobbying anyone. But a wink, a nod, a phone call, a whispered word, that shit's easy to get around. It's why they wrote the law that way, to make it look like they were doing something positive. Only there are holes in it big enough to drive a semi through.
You seem to have checked that out pretty thoroughly,
noted Puller.
I like to know what I'm dealing with,
said Sands.
Meaning what exactly?
Meaning exactly what I just said.
So would drug dealing qualify as besmirching the family's reputation? Asked Pine.
Who says I'm dealing drugs?
You say you're not?
No, I'll just sit here and confess to two feds. You want it in writing or is verbal okay?
Puller leaned in even further.
I'm going to tell you something, and I want your opinion, all right?
Sands looked surprised by this, but nodded.
Okay.
Tony Vincenzo is a pill maker. That's beyond doubt. I've got two of his stooges cooling their heels in the stockade at Fort Dix. Plus, we found a ton of evidence at his dad's old home. That's the first point. The second point is, we have encountered extraordinary opposition from both state and federal platforms to our investigation. My question to you, why would a run-of-the-mill drug op trigger so many players on the other side with the intent of burying the truth?
Sands took a sip of coffee before answering.
I don't know. Maybe it's not a run-of-the-mill drug operation.
So is that penthouse on Billionaire's Row a heroin silo, or what?
No, it's just a playpen, a perk for the faithful.
Pine noted that Sands' despair had faded, and his confidence bolstered as the conversation had veered to this topic. But his features betrayed that maybe he had said too much. Then you must be one of the faithful. So tell us, where do you direct that faith? Asked Pine. Sands leaned forward.
I don't want any part of this, okay?
Do you want part of prison?
Said Puller.
You have no proof of anything.
I've got witnesses ready to rat your ass out, Sands.
Two.
You really think I'm going to tell you that?
You're bluffing. I've got nothing.
Then walk out of here right now, said Pine. There's the door. Keep in mind, they got to a guy in a federal prison. Keep in mind, they got to your friend Sheila. Keep in mind that Lindsay is in on it, and she strikes me as a survive-at-all-costs kind of gal. So now that you've been seen with us, how long do you think you have?
You're trying to scare me.
I'm giving you the facts. If the facts scare you, so be it. Sands glanced at the door.
You'd really just let me walk out of here?
Sure,
said Puller.
But before you go, you have any idea where Tony Vincenzo is?
No, I haven't seen him in about a week.
And how do you know him? You didn't say.
We met a while back, hung out. He's cool.
And why do you have access to the penthouse if you're not contributing to the cause? Said Pine. It didn't strike me as a freebie sort of place. What's the price of admission? Sands shrugged and stared down at his coffee.
You can understand our skepticism that you're clean, Jeff, right?
Said Puller.
Do you know who owns that penthouse?
No.
Who told you about it? Who said you could go there?
Some guys. I forget their names.
I doubt they'll forget yours. Well, I think we're done here, Jeff. Have a nice life, however short it might be.
Puller rose and Pine did likewise. Sands looked up at them.
You just gonna leave me here by myself?
Puller looked at Pine and then said,
You said you're clean. We have no grounds to hold you. What do you expect us to do? You said before you had someplace to go. So, go.
They moved toward the door.
Look, hey, guys.
They turned back. A pale Sands, the jauntiness struck clean from him, rose and joined them.
I don't want to die, okay?
So what do you do about it? Said Pine. Because the only way we can help you is if you help us. You're a college boy. You're smart enough to grasp that concept. Sands glanced nervously around. A few of the customers were staring at him.
Can we go somewhere and talk about this? Maybe we could figure something out.
Sure,
said Puller as he laid some cash down for their coffees. He gripped Sands by the arm and nodded at Pine.
Check the back. We can't take any chances with him.
Pine cautiously exited out the back door and did a recon of the area behind the restaurant. Her gaze took in all sectors, sight lines, and hiding places. Satisfied, she crept back to the door and called out, Clear! Puller came out with Sands. We can go back to my place, said Pine. Sands said,
Where's that?
He didn't finish, due to the rifle round slamming into his head. It passed through the back of his skull and plunged right into Puller. Both men dropped to the ground. John! Cried out Pine. Sands was clearly dead, and it looked like John Puller might be too. Chapter 44. Pine had never liked hospitals, ever since she nearly died in one as a child back in Georgia. She had been in and out of consciousness in the ambulance that had taken her there. Bright lights, masked people, tubes and lines being inserted in her. Her anguished and sobbing mother. The race down the hallway on the gurney. The white, antiseptic room. Strangers hurtling around her. Machines beeping. Overhead lights like a cluster of suns so intense they hurt, so she closed her eyes. And then there was a prick of something. Another something covered her mouth. Dark. Then she rose again like Jesus. Or at least her tired mind had remembered this little tidbit from vacation Bible school. Her mother had been there. Her father. Others. A man with a white coat. A smiling nurse. She would live, it seemed. Now she sat in the visitor's room at the hospital where the ambulance had taken Puller. She had ridden over with him. Every memory of her own frantic ambulance ride coming back to her in waves conjured from 30 years ago. She held his hand, whispered encouragement into his ear, unsure if he could hear her, whether he was actually conscious. But she had felt him squeeze back, however weakly, and then he was whisked off for emergency surgery. When Mercy had vanished, 6-year-old Pine had prayed every night for her sister's safe return. She had prayed all the way until the eighth grade. And after that, she had prayed no more. Until now. She got down on her knees and pressed the palms of her hands together. God, this is a good man. A just man. Please don't let him die. Please. We need him. I need him. Please save him. She quickly rose when Blum bustled in.
How is he?
Still in surgery. They said they'd come in when they were done and let me know how it went.
Have you reached his family?
His father has dementia. I left word for his brother at a number I scrounged up. I don't know if it's good.
Do you know his father and brother?
His father is an army legend and John's namesake. His brother, Robert, is a lieutenant colonel in the Air Force. A once-in-a-generation talent with computers, according to Puller. I've never met either of them. It must have been awful last night. It was pretty awful, yes.
Did you see the shooter?
No. I covered Puller with my body when he went down. I knew Sands was dead. Half his brain ended up on Puller's clothes. I fired in the direction of the shot, but they didn't return fire. By the time the police got there, it was way too late. The shooter was gone.
And did Sands tell you anything helpful before he was killed?
He was going to, I think.
So you were being followed last night?
Yes. We ran into two thugs earlier who were going to come down heavy on Sands, probably over drugs. We chased them off. I don't think it was them.
So maybe whoever Sands was going to finger?
I guess we'll never know for sure. The door opened, and they both turned to see who it was. Pine was expecting the surgeon and praying it would be good news. But the tall man in his late 30s was wearing Air Force ABUs. That service branch's camouflage version.
Are you Atlee Pine?
He asked. Pine rose and looked at the man. He was an inch shorter than Puller and not as muscular, but the face and the eyes didn't lie. You're Robert Puller, she said, shaking his hand.
I came as soon as I got your message.
He glanced at Blum, who nodded at him, a sympathetic expression on her features. This is my assistant, Carol Blum.
What's his condition?
Asked Puller. He's still in surgery. They promised to come in here after it was over.
You said you were there. How bad is it?
Had to have been a rifle round. Went through Jeff Sands' skull before it hit your brother. So that was good. A lot less kinetic energy.
Where did the round hit him?
Pine touched her upper torso on the left side. Here. In and out, which I hope was good. But he bled a lot. I stopped it as best I could. Then the paramedics arrived and took over. He was in and out of consciousness. Then they put him on a drip and he went under. His vitals on the ride were critical but stable. Pine had to sit down because recounting all of this so clinically and impersonally had suddenly run up against the fact that the person she was discussing was a friend and that he might still die. Puller sat down next to her and gripped her shoulder.
He's the toughest man I know, Agent Pine. If anyone can pull through, he will.
Pine leveled a far calmer gaze on him. Please, make it Atlee. She paused, desperately wanting to change the subject. John mentioned you used an algorithm to turn up Gloria Miles, which led us to Jeff Sands. How did you do that, Colonel Puller?
I go by Robert.
Puller sat back and brushed at his regulation short hair.
From what John explained to me, I concluded that we were operating in exalted circles. No run-of-the-mill drug dealer can get a vice chair removed from his assignment at the Pentagon on a day's notice because the man was making inquiries. That narrowed things down quite a bit. I ran a script on possible connections between highly ranked politicos and any connection at all to criminal activity, including drug dealing, because it seemed to have a nexus to what you were looking into. I ran a series of calculations, and the one name that kept popping out was Jeff Sands and his grandfather, Peter Driscoll. Next, I looked for any connection to them that John could use as an investigative point of contact. That's how I got to the godmother, Gloria Miles.
How long did all of this take you? Asked a wide-eyed Pine.
I did it over lunch. I'm not that fast, but the computers I use are, and the databases they have access to are truly immense.
Can the FBI borrow you for, like, the rest of your life? Interjected Blum. Puller added,
But now Sands is dead, so that lead is dead too.
At least we know more now than we did, said Pine. But all I want right now is to hear that John is going to be fine. At that moment, the door to the visitor's room opened once more. The woman was in her 50s, and she wore blue scrubs and spectacles. Her hair was salt and pepper, and her expression was one, it seemed to Pine, of relief. Agent Pine. Yes, she said, jumping up. Robert Puller did likewise. He's out of surgery and stable. He's going to make it. He's quite a strong young man. Yes, he is. This is his brother, Robert Puller. Puller shook hands with the surgeon.
Thank you, doctor.
I noticed that he had several previous wounds that had healed.
He's Army, Middle East.
The doctor nodded. That explains it. Well, he just added another one to the collection.
When can we see him?
He's in recovery and needs to rest. I would say later today or tomorrow even. He's strong, but he's been through a lot. Pine said. Will he make a full recovery? I think he'll be fine. I mean physically and all, like he was before. He's a CID agent in the Army. Oh, I see. She looked from Pine to Puller. Well, I can't make any guarantees, but I hope that he will. I can't say 100%. There was some internal damage. But from the looks of him and from what you just told me, I wouldn't bet against him either. She left and closed the door. Pine and Puller collapsed into their chairs. Pine put a supportive arm on Puller's shoulder. He's going to make it, Robert. That's what's most important.
Thank God,
Puller said quietly. To herself, Pine added, Yes, thank you, God. Thank you. Chapter 45. A few hours later, Pine and Blum left the hospital and returned to Lineberry's condo. Robert Puller had opted to stay at the hospital. Pine texted him her address. She planned to be back at the hospital later that day. Hopefully, they could see John Puller then. An exhausted Pine slept until 2 p.m, then sat in her bedroom and looked out the window. The day looked like it would be warmer than the previous ones had been, and free of rain. Her belly was empty, and she had a hunger headache, but she didn't want to waste time eating right now. She felt terrible guilt for what had happened to Puller. She knew all about the company line, that it came with the territory. But still, she felt immense responsibility for the man's nearly dying. And with Sands dead, they really had no leads to pursue. She phoned Robert Puller. He told her that his brother seemed to be doing as well as possible. She thanked him for the info and said she would come to the hospital later. She showered and changed into fresh clothes. When she came out, Blum had a meal on the table. Carol, thank you. But you don't have to do this. I'm perfectly capable of taking care of myself. It gives me something to do, Agent Pine. I don't like feeling idle and useless. Pine's phone buzzed. She didn't recognize the number, but it was a New Jersey area code. She answered it. The voice said, Agent Pine, this is Norma Bailey. I'm the principal at Jerome Blake School. Yes, Mrs. Bailey. I wanted to let you know that I have the photos of the school employees ready for your review. Can you email them to me? Yes, I can do that right now. Have you made any progress on what happened to Jerome? A little, but things are getting very complicated very fast. I hope you find the truth. Jerome deserves that. I'll do my best. Pine gave her the email address. A minute later, the photos were deposited in her inbox. She looked at Blum. I just got the photos of the school personnel from Norma Bailey at Jerome School. Terrific. Now we just have to find that young man. What was his name again? Peanut. But I have a shortcut that I hope will save us some time. They left New York and drove back to Trenton, arriving at Jerome Blake's home about 90 minutes later. His mother answered their knocks. Have you found out who killed my boy? She said. Not yet, but we're still working on it, replied Pine.
We met a friend of Jerome's. He said his name was Peanut. Blake nodded, looking thoughtful. Jerome and Peanut were real tight when they were younger. Then they went their separate ways. Do you know where we might find Peanut? And what's his real name? Donald Washington. His grandma lives on the next block over. What does he have to do with what happened to Jerome? He told us he saw a man speaking to Jerome the day of the shooting at school. He said Jerome looked really weird afterward. I've got some pictures of employees at the school to show him, to see if he recognizes the man. Can you give us Peanut's address so I can do that? Peanut don't live at home anymore, just his grandma there now, and she's doing poorly. So where might we find him? Asked Pine. He hangs out over at a gym on Broad Street, Calhoun's. Why a gym? Does he like to work out? A few guys box there, but I don't think most folks who go there care nothing about working out. It's just a safe place to go and hang out. You find the guy who owns it. His name's Gerald. He's a good man. But other business happens there, said Pine. Blake held up her hands. Not in the gym, no. Gerald don't allow for that. But outside? I ain't getting in the middle of that. I got my jewel to raise. She needs her mama. How's she doing? Not good. Still crying her eyes out. This must be so traumatizing for her. I know what it's like to lose a sibling. If we can do anything, please let us know. They drove off and quickly found Calhoun's. It was an old, dilapidated building with ancient boxing posters plastered across its front, many of them ripped or faded by the sun. Some young men were hanging around outside. The area was run down, with boarded-up storefronts and a general air of decay. She parked at the curb about a block down and told Blum to wait in the car and to get in the driver's seat, which she did. Are you sure you don't want me to go with you? Very sure, Carol. And keep the doors locked and the engine running. Anything starts looking hinky, just leave. If you're not out in 20 minutes, should I call the police? I'll be okay. Pine walked past the groups of young men who gave her long stares and some catcalls, but they otherwise ignored her. She went into Calhoun's, which turned out to be built out like a warehouse. There were high, angled ceilings, industrial support columns, three boxing rings, and thousands of square feet of workout equipment that looked old and shabby. There were a few guys hoisting iron, and others expertly skipping rope, and still others going after speed and heavy bags, but most were congregated around one of the boxing rings. Pine walked over there and joined the crowd. Several young men tried to bar her way, but a broad-shouldered man with curly gray hair and wearing an old-fashioned three-piece suit and a brilliant red tie said,
Hey, show some respect. Let the lady through.
The men obeyed, and Pine came to stand next to him. Thanks, Mr.
Just call me Gerald. And you are?
Atlee Pine.
Had an aunt down in Alabama named Atlee. God rest her soul.
Quite the gym.
Really? Forgive me, but I thought you'd be one of them folks who like the juice bar and the Peloton and that yoga stuff.
Then he ran his eye over her, not in a sexual way, but in a way of a person experienced at gauging fitness.
But then again, looking at your shoulders, thighs, and core, I would be wrong about that, wouldn't I?
I'm a power lifter. The gym where I work out in Arizona has no AC, just a lot of iron and a lot of sweat, and no juice bar need apply. She looked around. And from what I can see of this place, I think I'd fit right in.
Well, come back any time to work up a sweat. Now, what can we do for you?
I'm looking for a young man named Peanut.
And why would you be doing that?
Gerald's tone was still very polite, but his smile and gaze had hardened just a bit. He told me he could help me on a case. I wanted him to look at some photos I just got.
A case?
She showed him her FBI badge. Jerome Blake's death. Did you know him? Gerald took a moment to look at the throng of young men around them and said,
Hey, fellas, give us space so me and this lady can have a private talk, okay?
The group fussed a bit over this directive, but they all moved away. Gerald looked back at Pine.
I knew his brother, Willie. Would have made a fine light heavyweight.
His mother said she got him to move.
So she did, and Cece made the right call. He was heading down the wrong path.
Cece told me to look you up here, that you were a good man.
She's a nice lady. Had a hard time, like a lot of folks around here.
He looked at the two men in the ring, both in their 20s, muscled, wearing head protection gear and bobbing and weaving as they danced around the ring.
Like those two right there. Maybe their mamas should get them out of here, too.
So what keeps them here? You? He put his hand on one of the ropes.
Lived here my whole life. Fought in the ring a lot in my day. Was pretty good. Marine Corps champion for my weight class. Served my time in Nam. Got a lung full of Agent Orange, which derailed any athletic career I might have been contemplating. I'm 71 years old and feel like I'm 100. You have days like that?
I think we all do, even without breathing in Agent Orange.
Anyway, I started this gym in 1977. Been running it ever since, trying to teach the young folks around here the art of pugilism. But really, I'm just trying to give them a safe place to go to. Learn some discipline. Learn about working hard, setting goals, getting together in groups without pursuing any illegal activity, if you get my point.
All good things. So, Peanut?
He's usually around here this time of day. Let me go check.
Gerald walked off, and the situation changed immediately. She could sense the heightened tension, the more focused gazes of the men who had once more clustered around her. The men in the ring stopped what they were doing and leaned over the ropes. One took out his mouthpiece and snarled.
What you doing here?
Just asking about someone.
You ain't got the right to ask about nobody,
barked the other man, spitting out his mouthguard.
You can't come in here and ask nothing.
And why is that?
She's a cop,
said one of the men in the crowd.
Saw her flash a badge,
the first fighter said.
Then you ain't welcome here. You just good for shooting us in the back.
Pine sized him up. I'll make a deal with you. If you can kick my ass, I'll leave. If I kick your ass, I stay and get my questions answered. Deal? The two fighters looked at each other and belly laughed. The crowd of men behind her closed ranks and did likewise.
You gonna get in this ring with me?
He said with an incredulous look that eased to a grin. Unless you want to come out here.
No, step right up. Which teeth you want to lose and which ones you want to keep. I'll try to be accommodating.
The other man split the ring ropes so Pine could duck under. She stood to her full height and drew closer to the man she was about to combat. He looked a little surprised that she was taller than he was. Pine took off her jacket, revealing the Glock in her belt holster.
You want me to hold your peace for you, lady?
Said one man in the crowd.
That would be a no.
She looked at the man in the ring. How much do you weigh?
160.
Wow, almost as much as me. I'm 5 pounds heavier, for the record. Pine had on a short-sleeved shirt underneath, and her ropey, corded muscles were clearly visible. The man glanced over at his friend, who shrugged and looked a little nervous as he stepped out of the ring. Okay, what are the rules? Asked Pine.
Shit, ain't no rules in here.
The man laughed. Great! In a blinding move, Pine slammed a foot into his gut, and when he doubled over, she laid her right leg against the side of his head with such stunning force that it knocked him right through the ropes, where he was caught by several of the onlookers below. She walked over and looked down at him.
Okay, warm-up's over. You want to start now, or just answer my questions? Your call.
They heard someone clapping, and all turned to see Gerald walking back to the ring alone. Gerald stopped next to the boxer Pine had laid out and knelt down.
Okay, Ty, remember what I keep telling you about disrespecting the women?
Ty nodded dumbly. Gerald helped him to his feet and looked up at Pine.
Peanut ain't here.
He turned to the others.
Anybody here know where Peanut is?
Pine looked over the crowd one by one until a young man around 18 stepped forward.
Seen him over at Duke's,
said the man.
Before I come here.
Pine glanced at Gerald. Duke's?
When you leave here, go right 3 blocks, then go left. It's a store.
What do they sell? She asked.
It depends,
said Gerald.
It just depends on what you want. But if I were you, I wouldn't be buying.
Chapter 46. Duke's was a storefront that looked abandoned, just like every other storefront around here. Pine peered through the glass doors, but it was too dark inside to make out anything. She rapped on the glass, then she rapped again.
What do you want?
She looked up to see a man staring down at her from the second floor window.
I'd like to talk to Peanut. I heard he was here.
Who'd you hear that from?
A guy over at Calhoun's.
And you are?
The man was in his 40s with wiry dark hair and a stern, suspicious countenance. As he leaned out, she could see he was wearing a compression-fit sleeveless athletic shirt, showing arms and shoulders that were both heavily muscled and tatted.
Just a friend. I met him over at the school.
Peanut don't go to school.
But his friend Jerome did. I'm trying to find out what happened to him.
Then you a cop?
I have some pictures to show Peanut. He agreed to look at them.
The man disappeared from the window. A minute later, the shop door opened, and there stood Peanut.
You got them pictures?
He said.
Yeah.
She looked over his shoulder to see the man standing about 10 feet farther back in the room. Pine said quietly, So, what sort of business goes on here?
This and that?
Right. Is that guy in there, Duke?
Maybe.
You don't know?
I don't know much. Works fine for me.
They got into the car and Peanut was shown all the photos one by one. At the end, he said,
He ain't in there.
You're sure?
Real sure. Ain't nobody in there look like he did.
Pine sat back, enormously frustrated. She looked at Blum. We keep running into dead ends and I'm really getting sick of it. Peanut said,
See, what I can't figure is, why'd Jerome do it at all? I mean, why he let a man do that to him? Give him a gun and set him up? 'Cause that had to be what went down. And then he gets shot on top of it? Why do shit when you know you're gonna die? Why not say no and take your chances?
Maybe Jerome didn't know he was going to die, replied Blum. Pine glanced at Peanut. You said you haven't been friends with Jerome for a long time?
Yeah, so?
Would you know about any close friends he might have?
Not really. Maybe somebody at school. Why?
Because in the alley that night, he told me, we're in deep shit. I'm just trying to think of someone they could have threatened to get Jerome to do what he did.
Shit, lady, only ones he might do that for is his family. Nobody closer than that to him. They all real tight.
You know, I think you might be right about that. Thanks, Peanut. He opened the door.
And yeah, that's Duke in there.
This and that, said Pine. Peanut smiled.
Little of this and a little of that.
Give me your cell phone number in case I can get some more pictures to show you. I won't have to look you up in person. He did so and then climbed out of the car. After he went back into the shop, Blum said, Where are we going now? Back to Blake's house. I've got a hunch, and I'm praying that it pays off. Because if it doesn't, we have less than zero right now. Chapter 47.
Did you find Peanut?
Asked CC Blake when she answered their knock.
We did.
Turns out he really couldn't help us. But I was wondering if we could speak to your daughter. Blake looked confused.
To Jewel? Why?
We wanted to ask her a few questions about her brother. Blake shook her head.
She's really upset. Can barely get her to eat anything. And she won't come out of her room.
We will be very gentle, Cece. We have experience speaking with young people. And I really think it might help with finding out what happened to your son.
Well, okay. I guess you can try. You want me to go with you?
Just to introduce us. Then we'd like to speak with her alone.
No guarantee she'll see you, though. And I ain't gonna make her.
They followed Blake up the stairs and down the short hall to a bedroom door. She knocked.
Honey? It's them two ladies from the FBI again. They want to ask you some questions about your brother.
No!
A voice screamed out.
Tell them to go away!
Before Blake could answer, Pine stepped forward and said,
Jewel, it's really important.
I said no.
I'd like to know why your brother did what he did.
Go away!
Because I think he did it to protect you. Silence. Blake looked astonished.
What the hell do you mean by that? Protecting Jewel from what?
They turned when they heard the door start to open. And then there was Jewel. Tall and beautiful and well-developed for her age, with long dark hair swirling around her shoulders. She had on pajamas, with characters from Mulan on them. Her eyes were reddened and swollen.
It's okay, Mama. I'll talk to the lady.
You sure, baby?
Jewel nodded.
Yeah, I'm good.
Blake gave Pine a disapproving look.
Well, okay. But don't take too long, honey. You need to rest.
She slowly walked back down the stairs. Can we come in? Asked Pine. Jewel stepped back and let them pass through. The bedroom was cluttered with clothes on the floor, books lying around, an iPad on the unmade bed, and a smartphone on the nightstand, and used tissues littered over seemingly every available square inch. The walls were painted with a mural of what looked to be female superheroes.
Who did that?
Asked Blum, motioning to the wall. Jewel rubbed her nose.
Me and Jerome.
It's really excellent. You're both wonderful artists.
Jerome ain't anything anymore, except dead.
Pine leaned back against another wall and folded her arms over her chest. That's what we want to talk to you about. Jewel slumped on her bed and looked down at her bare feet. Pine began. A man met with Jerome at his school. After that meeting, Jerome was totally changed. Then that same night, he ends up in an alley holding a gun. And then he's shot by a cop who might not be a cop. She paused and glanced at Blum, who was standing rigidly by the mural wall. Jerome said something to me right before he died, Jewel. Do you want to know what he said? Jewel didn't look up, but she nodded.
What'd he say?
He said that no one would believe him when I asked what he was doing there. Then he said something else, and that's why we're here to see you. Jewel looked up now.
What did Jerome say?
He said, we're in deep shit. Why would this man be able to make him do something that would end up getting him killed? She stopped and looked at Jewel, who seemed to be withering to nothing under the gaze. It must have been someone very important to him. Like, maybe you, Jewel? Tears spilled down the girl's cheeks. Blum sat down next to her and took her hand.
I know this is so hard, Jewel. So very hard. But we're trying to find out who took your brother's life, and any help you can give us would be very appreciated.
Jewel wiped her eyes and stared up at Pine with a composed expression.
Jerome knew.
Knew about what?
The man who came to get me.
What man?
Just a man. He would come at night, when Mom was at work.
Where does your mother work?
She cleans buildings at night. Then she comes home in the morning and goes to sleep for a few hours. And then she has another job at Subway for the lunch crowd.
Okay. Maybe you should start from the beginning, suggested Pine.
Jewel collected herself. It started one night. I went somewhere I wasn't supposed to. Mama had to go see Willie, my other brother in Delaware, because he was sick. Jerome was supposed to be home, but he got called to do this thing with the robots. I told him I'd stay in, but I didn't.
Where did you go?
A party in Newark. I look a lot older than I am. I had a fake ID showing I was 21. I went with a couple of friends from school. We got a ride with another friend.
Where was the party?
At some guy's parents' house. I was there for a while, had a couple of drinks. And then someone said there was a van taking people to a place in New York. A guy came over and said I'd been picked to go.
How? What guy?
I don't know. He was older than me. Early 20s. Tall. Good looking. Said he was in college.
White or black?
Oh, he was a white dude.
Color of his hair? Asked Pine.
Brown. Sort of wavy. I mean, he was real handsome. Pime pulled out her phone and brought up the picture of Jeff Sands that she had gotten from Puller.
Was this the guy?
Jewel looked at the screen.
Yeah, that was him.
How'd you know that?
I didn't until just now.
Do you know his name?
I do.
Did he give you one? Just said it was Charlie or something like that.
Did he tell you why you were picked?
No.
And you just went?
Well, it was a bunch of us, so I felt safe. And it sounded exciting. Charlie even said there would be some real celebrities there. I mean some A-listers, not like old dudes. And I could meet them. And then he said I'd be given a ride back to my house.
What happened after that?
We drove to this building in New York.
Do you know where?
I don't know New York. I'd only been to the city one time when I was a kid. But the building they took me to that night had a doorman and a private elevator and stuff like that.
So you went up there with all the others?
Jewel shook her head. See, the thing was everybody got sort of separated. I ended up by myself heading up in the elevator. I was scared, but what could I do? I mean, I was already there.
What about Charlie?
He sort of disappeared. I didn't see him in the van. Everything happened so fast.
Then what?
The elevator opened right into someone's apartment. I never seen a place like that for real. I mean, it was like being in a movie. I mean, Jesus. I didn't know nobody lived like that, not really.
And then what happened?
A woman came out to greet me.
Describe her, said Pine.
She was maybe 35. Sandy hair. Shorter than me, She just looked normal.
Lean and fit with freckles?
Yeah, that sounds like her. And she did have freckles on her face.
Pine looked at Blum, who said, probably Lindsay Axelrod. Okay, what happened next? Pine asked Jewel.
She said that I was to make myself comfortable and someone would be out shortly. She asked me if I wanted a drink.
Jewel stopped for a moment.
I didn't know what to do. I mean, I'm only 14, so I told her just a Coke. She came back with it and I sat down and drank it.
And then what happened? Did someone else come out to see you?
Jewel shook her head, her eyes filling with tears. The next thing I know, I woke up in bed. I was naked and...
She bent over and sobbed. Blum put her arm around the girl's shoulders. I know this is so terribly hard. So painful for you. Just take your time, Jewel. Take all the time you need.
A minute later, Jewel composed herself, wiped her eyes, blew into the tissue Blum handed her, and continued. There was a man lying next to me in the bed. He was naked, too.
Do you remember what he looked like?
She nodded. Older, white guy, maybe 60 with gray hair. He was snoring really loud.
Jewel wiped at her eyes.
I was totally freaked out. I didn't know what the hell had happened. I mean, I was drinking a Coke and then this. But then when I sort of looked around in the sheets, I knew that...
She seemed unable to say it. That he'd had sex with you while you were unconscious.
She nodded, her eyes filling with tears. I got out of bed really quiet. I didn't want to wake him. I ran to the door and opened it, and...
Was someone there?
Jewel nodded. The same woman. She had my clothes all ironed and on hangers. She helped me get dressed. She calmed me down. She got me a ride home.
So they drugged your Coke and the man had sex with you?
I was so scared.
And when you got home, did you report this to the police?
I was going to, but...
But what? Said Pine.
I got a call on my phone. I don't even know how they got the number. It was a man.
And what did he say?
That if I told anyone, I'd get in big trouble.
Jewel, you were raped. You were drugged and then raped.
I know, but...
But what? Looking even more miserable, Jewel stuck her hand under her bed and pulled out a pillowcase. She held it up and dumped the contents on the bed. It was cash. A lot of it. Where did you get all that?
asked Blum.
That's the part I didn't tell you,